This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website is IllegalCurve.com. A big thank you to Al Strachan for joining us for really 30 minutes or so in that interview. In case you missed any of it, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on our website, IllegalCurve.com. When we come back from this break, we're going to talk about Evander Kane. Lots of rumors floating around him. We'll discuss what he's worth and what the Jets would be looking for in return if he was on the trade market. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, this is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Ezra Ginsberg to my left, Richard Pollock on my far left, producer Tim getting us on and off the air like the expert that he is. Earlier this week, it was reported on thefourthperiod.com, Dennis Bernstein of thefourthperiod.com reported that a couple of teams from around the NHL have been calling the Winnipeg Jets to inquire about Evander Kane. Mm-hmm. You know, and according to Dennis, who was on with Rick Ralph and the Rona Roundtable earlier this week, you know, he said that a couple of the teams that were primarily calling were the Philadelphia Flyers and the Montreal Canadiens. Before we talk about those teams specifically and how they seem match up with the Jets in a trade situation, let me ask you this question. And it doesn't have to necessarily be about Evander Kane specifically, but if you have a young forward who has, most people would think, 35 to 40 goal potential, mm-hmm. and you're looking to trade that player, mm-hmm. what are you asking for in return that you think is a realistic ask when it comes to a trade scenario?
Basically, you're not asking for a defenseman based on the Jets' need. You're asking for a forward who puts up similar point production, not necessarily similar goal production. That's what you're looking for, around the same age. I mean, you're not, you know, if you could prefer to be a little younger, you're okay with a year or two older, but you're not trading him for a 32-year-old.
So you're pretty much looking to trade your young asset.
Somebody that old is really washed up.
Somebody that old is 32?
Oh, you're 32.
Yeah, I get it. I'm 32 years old. I understood the joke, thank you. I mean, it was very humorous. This is the 30-year-old, but regardless. So then let's look at the Evander Kane situation specifically. If he's on the trade market, and we don't know, we've only reported what Dennis Bernstein has reported and what other people have said. Uh-huh. We haven't heard anything specific. You know, what are the Winnipeg Jets asking for? Let's start with the team we saw here last night, Philadelphia Flyers.
Well, if you're talking about Evander Kane, Richie, I mean, is this not a similar situation to Matt Molson, Thomas Vanek? I mean, you're talking about top-line players, and even though Evander Kane right now is a second-line player, I still think that he is the type of player that you're asking for a similar player in return. So Evander Kane is not going to get a center and two first-round draft picks. He was just signed to a 6-year contract. So if you're talking about the Philadelphia Flyers, straight up for Evander Kane, I mean, you're not talking Evander Kane for Claude Giroux straight up. I think we would think that's a mismatch. But like, as far as the players on the Philadelphia Flyers, if you're asking for a forward straight up, because I don't think the Jets are giving up Evander Kane for a Braden Coburn or a Luke Shen, I mean, no. then you're starting to talk about, well, is it Wayne Simmonds? Is it Matt Reed? I think we'd agree that Evander Kane has higher goal-scoring potential than those guys, but maybe you're talking about a couple of those guys. To me, Richie... Okay, and we're spitballing here. I really like Braden Shen. He's leading the Flyers in points right now. Now, we can sit here and argue, is he a first-line center? Is he a second-line center? To me, Braden Shen is an improvement over what the Jets have now. So if I'm talking straight up, I'm talking Evander Kane for Braden Shen.
I'm concerned if I'm the Jets. If I'm asking for Shen, I'm asking for a defenseman too. And even then, it's talented. I think they start with Voracek. I think that's your target right there.
do you ask for more because given the contract situation? I mean, if you're trading Evander Kane, you're trading him and his contract, and that team that's acquiring him has cost certainty. They know what they're going to have to pay Evander Kane for the next 4 or 5 years. It's not like this is a trade where next year he's going to be, you know, either a restricted free agent or a free agent, and you don't, you know, his salary may jump up in a huge amount.
Yeah, he's got 2 more years than Voracek, but Voracek's still got 2 seasons after this one.
Right.
At a more reasonable cap hit based on what he produces.
Yeah, and people forget Voracek is only 24 years old.
Yeah.
A lot of people think he's older, but he's been in the league, you know, since a young age, as has Kane. But, I mean, these are the players you're talking about. You're talking about players similar in age. Shen's younger. I believe he's 1 year younger than Kane, if not 2 years younger than Kane. But you're talking about that because if the Jets are to make a move this year, whoever they end up trading, it'll be a one-for-one move because you have to be getting an equal return for what you're giving up here. With Evander Kane, yeah, he struggled, and yeah, there are some issues that we've discussed that have happened in the dressing room within the media, but you're still talking about giving up a guy who is a huge part of your team, right? So you're not giving him up for anything that, I mean, does he get a first round?
I mean,
does he return a first round pick, Rich?
Also, I'm getting a call here, but Kevin Shevadev hasn't made any trades really like of significance since he came here. So you're assuming that he would pull the trigger on a big one here.
Both big moves have been with the Blackhawks.
Yeah, and those are, is he trading Johnny Oduya and trading?
Well, I'm just saying those are
for
those
are big moves.
Those are but those are the most significant moves.
That's
he's
what I'm
made.
Saying. But there's not a, that's right. not a right. significant move like
no.
in a big scheme.
Trading
of
Evander Kane is a significant shakeup to a team's roster and to the makeup of the Jets organization. And I mean, so that's, you know, that's the Philadelphia Flyers' perspective. You're saying you're talking about a guy like Voracek or like a guy like Simmons or Shen.
Right. And I mean, the rumor that's been floating out there, Pacioretty's a left winger.
This was reported by a guy in Montreal. I don't have his name handy, but it was a radio personality in Montreal saying that the Jets and the Canadians had talked about a Kane for Pacioretty trade.
Right, and I look at that trade and I don't see either team doing that, really. And, you know, from Kevin Cheveldayoff's perspective, does that make his team better? Because that's ultimately what you're doing here if you are entertaining these offers seriously. Because this is all conjecture and speculation, but I mean, if you're coming from his perspective, Richie, you're not making a move for the sake of making a move here. Because this is a guy that you've invested for 6 years, so you better be getting something that you feel can make your team better. And Vanek for Molson is a trade that I look at for the Islanders, and I say it doesn't make them look better, plus they give up the draft picks. So Kane gets a player of equal value, unless you're talking about significant draft picks, so a first round or second round or something like that.
Well,
but you got to have a player coming back. You've invested in him, not just in the contract that he signed last year, but he's been with the Thrashers his entire career. So you've invested in him as a franchise. So you better be getting a good player coming back.
Well, I mean, you look at, you know, Pacioretty. They're both signed through, I mean, Pacioretty signed through 2018-19.
He just signed a contract extension this year.
It's a 4.5, and Kane's at 5.25, signed through 2017-18. The problem here is that you're trading very similar players. I mean, you're talking big guys who can skate and who can shoot. Both have really good wrist shots. Both guys can skate really well for their size. A little bit different in terms of their style. But their production, you know, you're not that far away from each other. You know, Pacioretty has had his 33-goal season. Kane, to me, is a more pure goal scorer. But Pacioretty can score, and I mean, he's better, you know, easier to play with in terms of teammates as opposed to Kane. But had some injury issues. Kane's pretty reliable. You know, obviously the Chara hit and the injury issues he's faced. He got injured here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the hamstring injury he had here. So earlier in the season. So you maybe have some concerns about that. I don't know. Are you that much better with that trade? Does that do much for your team? Does he make that many players better? I don't know. There's risk there in terms of Kane becoming some kind of a goal scorer, but there's also cost certainty in Pacioretty, and you have terms. So you're not going to lose a guy. I don't see that trade happening, though. But
right.
I could see it certainly have been discussed. Why not? You know, I think the Habs probably know what they have in Pacioretty and probably think that Kane can still be a little bit better than that.
It'll be interesting to see what the Jets end up doing if they decide to do anything. They're under no, you know, there's certainly no shotgun to their head when it comes to the Evander Kane.
There isn't at all, but I would not be surprised at all if he's moved. But I also wouldn't be surprised at all if he isn't. That's the thing.
Well, the history of the organization has shown that cautious is the good way to describe them above all. But time will tell when we will have it for you here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Minnesota Wild TV analyst Mike Greenlay talking about tomorrow's Wild Jets game in St. Paul. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Two hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with your latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the Minnesota Wild television analyst, Mike Greenlay. Mike, good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure.
Mike, you look at the Wild, 8-1-1 in their last 10, just a tremendous streak that they're on. What's been the key to the success over the last 10 games?
Well, I think they've found some consistency in their lineup. I believe the last four or five games they've had pretty much the same lines rolling. They're getting some consistency in their depth of scoring. It's not just one line doing it. And they've had Josh Harding, who is continually coming in there. And even though he may face 20 shots, he may face 25, 30, it doesn't matter. It's the key saves that he's making. He's making very timely saves. He may not see a shot for five to 10 minutes sometimes, and then all of a sudden have to come up with a very big one, and he does. So it's really pretty fluid right now, and I know they want to keep the ball rolling.
Mike, we know Ryan Suter is certainly a Norris Trophy candidate, but you look at his ice time over the past five games, and last night's game against Florida, 26 minutes and 49 seconds, was his easiest night. The games before that, he played 36 minutes, 35 and a half, almost 37 against the Capitals, 46 shifts, and then over 30 minutes against Calgary. Can he sustain this?
I don't think it's hard to say. I don't know if they want him to. I think, they also look at those three games. They all went to they all went to shootouts, and so that means that you had an extra 5 minutes of playing time in the overtime, and he naturally would log plenty of that as well. So I think that contributed to it. The fact is that I think he's like one of those Pronger, Niedermeyer, Scott Stevens type of guys who just are always on the ice. They know how to manage their ice time. So they go hard when they have to. They know when they can kind of just, contain things. And he's not, skating 100 miles an hour the whole time. So, they're good managers of their game. But, they're also a unique player. I mean, there's a lot of guys that even when they manage their game couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, he's a unique kind of player. I don't think the Wild have set out to try and rack him up to 35 minutes a game. if the situation dictates that he does, then so be it. But, it's truly remarkable. I think there's, as of a few days ago, I think there were maybe only a handful of guys that had played over 30 minutes a game this season, and the highest one was someone had played three. He has played eight or nine now, so games over 30 minutes. So he's the front runner in that circumstance. So he just seems to be able to carry the load.
Mike, Jason Pominville continues to be excellent for the Wild, and he was playing a little bit on the top line with Koivu and Parisi, but now he's playing with Granlund and Nino Niederreiter on the second line. For you, what's been the most pleasant surprise about Pominville's game this year?
Well, he's been, and he's always been a durable guy, actually. I mean, he's healthy. Last year when he came in, and he got the elbow to the face by Brown and knocked him out for pretty much the rest of the season. With a couple games left in the season and then the first four games in the playoffs. But, the fact is he's durable. He's been healthy. He's been a great leader out there. The fact that he was on the first line, and they put him down to the second line to try and help get something going from a depth perspective and maybe help Granlund out. And that clearly has been a great combination. He and Granlund kind of think the same way. They skate similarly. They find each other on the ice. Nino Niederreiter is a big kid who creates some space out there. So it's been fun to watch these young kids kind of slowly mature here next to a veteran. And credit to him that he signed an extension and he seemed to get better. So that's not always the case. We've seen that in the past, but it's terrific to see him. He's got a great hockey sense, no question about that. He finds the holes to get open, and he's got great speed, and for a guy his size, I think he's got an incredible release and heavy shot for a guy his size. I mean, he can really bring the puck. So, there's so many good elements, and even though he was considered pricey when we acquired him last year, and they gave up a couple pretty good prospects and a first and second round pick, it was a price that now you're starting to say, well, man, now that we've signed him to an extension and everything, it's a price well paid. So, I guess kudos to him for being a great professional, and I guess kudos to GM Chuck Fletcher for recognizing his future with this organization.
You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Mike Greenlee. He's the Minnesota Wild TV analyst. Mike, you mentioned Michael Granlund. He's got 12 points on the season so far, 2 goals, 10 assists. Can you talk about how, he's become more confident on the ice as the season has progressed so far?
Well, it's funny because, the first few games of the season and even when he started to have some success there, we're always comparing him to what he did last year, and I think I said at one point, well, we got to stop doing that because he's a totally different person. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is a totally different player out there. We got to start comparing him to what he did 2 games ago, not to what he was doing the previous year. He's entirely confident, has some more strength, has some more speed. Coaches like to use the old the phrase battle level. How hard are you working at winning the battles, and his has gone way up. I mean, he actually seeks out traffic when he doesn't have the puck to try and take the puck away from guys. He's using his body. He's leveraging very well against the wall when he does have the puck, or when he's battling for it. I mean, there's so many more aggressive things to his game. He's not shying away from traffic. He's not shying away from guys that are bigger than him. And all of that's bringing out the other parts of his game, his speed, his vision on the ice. Put him together with a guy like Pominville, and they've clicked very well. And, there was a sequence there where Pominville scored, I think, 5 goals in a span of, I think, 3 games. And I think Granlund was a direct assist on 4 of the 5 or something. So they know how to find each other on the ice, and Granlund, he's starting to show a lot of those signs that I think the scouts knew he had, but needed some time to adjust to the smaller rink in the North American game, the more physical nature of it, the less time that you have to make decisions. And so he's as Mike Yeo was telling me the other day, he's playing an inside-out game, not an outside-in. And what he meant by that was last year he'd skate around the perimeter and then try to skate to the middle of the ice to try and get a pass or get open. Well, now he's starting in the middle of the ice, and then he's maybe branching off in different areas and getting an opportunity to shoot the puck, and so that's a more aggressive style, and it's working for him.
Mike, you mentioned Nino Niederreiter, and I agree with you. I think he's been really good this year, and he's starting to look like a high first-round draft pick, and he's been fit in really nicely on that second line. And another guy that we haven't mentioned yet is Matt Cook, who was acquired, and he's played well as well. How important are guys like Niederreiter and Matt Cook solidifying those second and third lines for the Wild?
Well, there isn't any question that you need some sandpaper out there. I mean, and those guys are providing a lot of it. I think Niederreiter, over the last few games, is starting to get tested more physically, and he's passing those tests pretty well. I mean, he just, regardless of whether he gets knocked down or gets a face wash or gets shoved around, he comes right back the next shift and he goes right back to the front of the net. And, Matt Cook's done that his whole career, so that's really not anything new there. But the fact that Cook's playing, you know, I guess a cleaner style, if you want to call it that. He's always been a good in his own end of the ice. He's got great skating ability, and you know, so I think a lot of people actually overlook how good a hockey player Matt Cook was just because of the other antics. Mm-hmm. And now that he's kind of cleaned that part of his game up, it's interesting. You start to really notice a lot of the, you know, a lot of the nuances of his game that are good, from his own zone to plays he can make in the offensive zone to the fact that he can still bring a physical nature out on the ice. So, you know, obviously a great addition to have Matt Cook, bring Matt Cook in a descending salary cap year. And so that was good. And, of course, we all think that Niederreiter was an absolute steal. To get a guy that's a fifth overall and to, you know, and Clutterbuck did what he did here, and that's great, but the fact is I think he kind of plateaued, whereas Niederreiter has, well, we still don't know what kind of potential he has. It certainly looks upward. So I think it's just a steal to have a guy like Niederreiter and to have him just figure in so nicely with all the other young, talented players that are kind of starting to filter into the Wild lineup now.
Mike, as a former goalie, you can probably appreciate more than many people out there the play of Josh Harding thus far. But a guy like Harding, you know, who's been in Minnesota for quite a while, can you talk about the season for him and maybe like how he's got to this point?
Well, you know, it's interesting because he's had opportunities in the past few years to, you know, maybe take on a bigger role, and he's had some bad luck, and he's had some circumstances where, you know, maybe an injury or something else occurs, and that kind of dissipates, and then, you know, then Backstrom got healthy and came back. But, you know, this year, I mean, not only do the Wild really need him, he has been durable. He's been a good pro out there. He's been very good, obviously, in the net. I think, you know, I look back to his career, and he did lose an entire year to that knee injury, but you know, during his career in the backup role, he, as I said, had some opportunities to step in and play some games. I think the most games he played in, and not necessarily started, but just played in a row, before this year, was something like four or five games where he'd actually played in a row. And you know, now this year he played nine in a row, was out a couple games, and now he's played, I think, five or six in a row. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that's due to the fact, because Backstrom's been hurt twice now, but the fact that he stepped in and really carried the load, and he hasn't just been average. I mean, he's been fantastic. So it's been great to not only see him take the opportunity, but to take it and go where he has gone with it. I mean, he's 9-0 at home, yeah, this year. that's phenomenal. But he's also played really well on the road too. So it's been great to be able to have a guy step in there, because, you know, if he weren't available and then Backstrom got hurt, and then you'd be saying, well, you know, where does that leave the Wild?
Yeah, Mike, obviously Jets fans won't want to hear that the Wild are 9-0 at home, but it's obviously good for the Wild. You know, you mentioned earlier in the interview, you know, the Wild are playing a little bit more of an aggressive style. As far as the systems and the overall style of the Minnesota Wild this year, has there been, you know, a concerted effort to change the style of the Minnesota Wild? And if so, what would that biggest change be?
I think from last year to this year, there's been a big change in terms of wanting to possess the puck a lot more. And I think there, you know, obviously there's a recognition by every team that the better teams in the National Hockey League are ones that carry the puck a lot, the ones that have the puck a lot, the guys who are in the offensive zone a lot, you know, and all of that, you know, usually correlates into more shots, more chances, and more goals. And, you know, it'd be great to, you know, every team wants to eventually get to that point, but you have to have the horses too. You can't do that if you don't have the kind mm-hmm. of depth in your lineup that can carry that. Now, the Wild, I think, recognizing that they do have that kind of skill now, are gonna try and possess the puck as much as they can. And early on in the season, they had it all the time. And I think once teams kind of got their systems down and you know, started to push back a little bit differently, the Wild still have had good sequences where they've controlled the game and controlled the puck a lot, but all in all, that's what they want. They don't want to just carry the puck and go D to D and zip it up for a chip in anymore. They ideally would like to carry the puck up. You know, inject their D into the play and get it to their forwards, who would then carry it into the offensive zone and control the puck. Because everyone knows that when you dump the puck in, it's in effect, even though you're dumping it in the offensive zone, you're in effect giving the puck up and then would have to forecheck and go back and get it again. So I think they just figured that they want to change their mindset a little bit and try and keep the puck as much as they can.
Mike, we'll let you go on this last question. You look at the Minnesota Wild record so far, and they're keeping pace in what is just, an impossible Central Division and Western Conference altogether. You know, 28 points so far this year. If the team has one area in which they need to improve upon, what would you think that is?
Well, I think they've played very well this year. I think there are some circumstances where they would like to play, like, I guess if you call it more of a 60-minute game. Of course, every team's going to have their periods where they don't really get things going the way they want to. But I think for the most part, if they can get their consistency up, they've been winning games, and you know they went these last few teams that they've played. I think the Floridas and Toronto played them pretty tough, obviously, but over the course of the last week or two, I think they had opportunities to maybe play more of the control kind of game that they wanted to. Obviously, you're going to get pushback from other teams, but I think just having a consistency of game and execution, you know, whenever they're not doing something right, you hear the coaching staff talk about the fact that we just didn't execute well. We know what we want to do. We're trying to do what we want to do, but you've got to execute it. And so, if anything, it's a consistency, but really, they're just playing a pretty good team game right now. Right now, playing a lot of Eastern teams, and as you said, a lot of teams are getting beat up over there, but eventually here, and probably in the next couple of weeks, the Wilds go pretty heavy on the Western schedule, and that's when all these teams are going to start feeding off each other. So that'll be that'll be a true test here in the first half of the year.
Mike Greenlay is the Minnesota Wild TV analyst. Mike, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon. Enjoy tomorrow's game, and I guess we'll see you in Winnipeg in about 1 week's time.
Yeah, sounds good. My pleasure.
Take care, Mike. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's go to break on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Mike Greenlay for having just joined us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you missed any of that interview, previewing tomorrow's Jets Wild game, it will be available on our website, illegalcurve.com. Also available on iTunes. Subscribe to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You'll get everything sent to you each and every time it's posted. And you can listen live, or you can always listen to the show on tsn1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by Chill Bar and Grill, located right at Confusion Corner, 423 McMillan Avenue. Chill Bar and Grill is Winnipeg's newest headquarters for great sports action. It's the Illegal Curve away game headquarters, so show up to the Chill Bar and Grill. Great setup, TVs everywhere, huge selection of craft beer, wine, cocktails, food, and of course, the Illegal Curve crew there as well. That's the Chill Bar and Grill, located right at Confusion Corner at 423 McMillan Avenue.
You're chilling, Drew.
I'm always chilled. I'm cool as a cucumber. Gentlemen.
You're something, all right.
Yeah, thank you. On a positive note, and I think we can give him a round of applause, the Edmonton Oilers scored a goal at home yesterday.
Yakupov.
Niall Yakupov. They finally scored a goal at home. It had been something like 200 minutes or 150 minutes straight of them not having scored a goal at home. The downside is that they lost 3-1 to the San Jose Sharks. The Oilers are, I mean, words, I can't even express it enough how lousy the Edmonton Oilers are.
They're so bad.
To be 4-15-2 in the NHL this day and age, where you get a point for showing up pretty much most nights. To be 4-15-2 and have given up 81 goals, which is 10 more than any other team in the NHL.
Who's second?
The Calgary Flames have given up 71 goals.
I mean, the Flames, like, full out admitting, rebuilding, basically, bringing in some goaltending. Jay Feaster coming on our show at noon today and saying their goaltending needs to be better.
Right. Yeah, and pretty much saying, you know, we knew this was going to be a white flag kind of season.
Yeah. Yep.
And they, I mean, how is it possible that the Edmonton Oilers are just this bad?
Well, I'll start off.
Please, guys, fight over who wants to talk.
Yeah. I mean, you say you're speechless about how a team can have 4 wins in their first 20 games, but Richie, you look at what they've gone through this year, right? Like Sam Gagner misses the early part of the season, right? And then he's played 8 games now, and he's struggled.
Sam Gagner ain't that good.
Sorry?
He ain't that good. Like, he's good, but he shouldn't be the reason they have 4 games.
Well, no, I'm just saying the some of the struggles they've had, right, were due to his injury. And then you had Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and Hall was injured a little bit. But you've got Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Taylor Hall, and Jordan Eberle on your top line. So those are 3 pretty good hockey players. You're talking about 2 first overall picks, and then you've got Yakupov there. You've got some talent there, and Hemsky. And you look at the team, and you know you brought in guys like Anton Belov and Andrew Ferentz. I said this 1 and 2 weeks into the season, the way Devan Dubnyk was playing was so poor that he wasn't giving his team a chance to win. Mm-hmm. And you look at the defense. I mean, Justin Schultz, everybody was raving about Justin Schultz. And we said on the show, too, Andrew Ferentz, good team guy, a huge mm-hmm. part of the Boston. I mean, there are a lot of issues here. You've got a new coach, new system. We've talked about their difficulty to adapt to Dallas Eakin's new system. But to me, it starts with goaltending. It starts with the guys they've brought in on defense haven't worked out. I think Andrew Ferentz is still Andrew Ferentz. I mean, he's a solid stay-at-home defenseman, can chip in a bit offensively, but it's not like you can say, well, Andrew Ferentz has been awful. There have been other guys that have been bad. You're trading Ladislav Smead. I mean, to us, what we said was, well, that's one of your best shot-blocking defensive defensemen. Like, what's going on here? To me, it starts with how poor that goaltending has been. By the way, I don't think Ilya Bryzgalov is going to solve that problem.
Gave up 4 goals or something last night?
I don't think he's the right guy for the job. I mean, Ilya Bryzgalov, guys, was a good goaltender for the Flyers for a couple of years, but he has regressed big time. And sure, let's see what he does in Edmonton, Richie. They gave him a 1-year contract.
Season's over.
Well, I'm just saying here.
Why are you bringing a guy in? I don't know why you're bringing a guy in.
When you're 4-15-1, you pretty much are done mathematically.
Season's over, so might as well play Dubnyk and see what you got. You know, if you thought he was good enough to come into the season, 15 games, he's been awful, obviously. Save 88% of his shots. I mean, come on, we're in the National Hockey League here. But you thought he was good enough to come into the season and make the playoffs because that was the goal. And you're going to bring Bryzgalov in when you're done? Season's over.
Right, so and
they won 11 games in a row. They're 500.
You mentioned exactly, and you mentioned which they're not going to do.
No, I know.
Who wins 11 games in a row?
That's what I mean.
Unless you're the Chicago Blackhawks, right?
Yeah.
So you look at the Oilers and you say, okay, well, all of this Nail Yakupov trade rumors. It's like, you know, we were talking about this before. I mean, now is the time to see what he does. You know, trade. I mean, what are you trading him for? This season's done. Right, so what are you going to trade him for a veteran guy?
Everybody is on their front line. They have lots of talent, but they're all the same. And I thought they're going to be good this year. I thought they're going to be a playoff team. So I'm going to be first to admit that. I thought that this day, I thought Eakins would be a nice fit there. I thought Dubnyk would play solid. They would play They'd be better defensively in terms of the style that they played. And adding Ferentz there is certainly not Chris Pronger, but he adds some stability to a younger back end. And a lot of talent up front. It's been a complete disaster. And the reason is nobody's played well. Nobody's played well.
Yep.
The fact that nobody's played well, at what point in time, you know, do you think the Oilers are going to make a panicky move, whether it be a trade
or
there's talk that Dallas Eakins is on the hot seat, although Craig McTavish came out this week and said that that's not going to change. Eakins is not
when
the problem.
You have to have a press conference like Craig McTavish had.
Yeah, 20 games into the season.
Your team's a disaster. I mean, let's call it what it is. And let's look at the group. You know, Craig McTavish came in and said, okay, I'm going to change the team. And then he adds another smaller, finesse forward. So,
and David Perron.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, talent-wise, that move worked. Now, cap-wise and other things, is that the right way to allot funds? We even asked that then. But there's still enough. I mean, the Western Conference is tough, guys. But and Vancouver has better defense, better goaltending. But, you know, Vancouver's got a good top line. But Vancouver doesn't have much after that. I mean, there are teams that they could beat. They should be competitive. And they should have built off of last year. And it's been the opposite. Now, Dallas Eakins came in there and talked a lot.
Yeah, talked a big game.
And he hasn't delivered on that, and don't think he's not feeling the pressure.
There's a lot of guys in Edmonton that have talked a big game. Craig McTavish has talked a big game as well.
Yep.
Here's his quotes from the press conference on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Things have obviously not gone as well as I would have thought probable. I'm not sure that makes any sense to begin with, so it might not be a problem. I'm frustrated. I'm pissed off. I want to see results. He said the low point for the Oilers was with their 5-0 home loss to Detroit on November 2nd. In speaking about Dallas Eakins, he said, what this team needs is continuity in coaching, and they're going to get it. Eakins is hitting all the right messages. I mean, it just seems...
it's 4 coaches in 5 years, so continuity in coaching, you better stick with that.
It's almost unheard of to have a general manager 20 games into the season sort of almost giving a vote of confidence both to the coach and himself. I mean, there's talk that fans in Edmonton are clamoring to see significant changes.
Right. Okay, let's talk about that for a second, though, okay? I'm telling you right now, Taylor Hall's not getting traded.
Right.
Jordan Eberle is not getting traded.
Right.
Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is not getting traded.
I agree.
Yakupov, I've said repeatedly, I don't think is either going to get traded.
I don't know about that.
But. He, out of those four, maybe, would get traded, but I think you look at what could get rid of. I think if somebody offers you something for Hemsky, you take it.
Yeah, it offers you like a second round pick.
Right.
If someone should have done that 5 years ago,
right,
though.
I think he doesn't figure into the long term plans. I think, you know, Ryan Smith, he'd probably like to retire an Oiler.
Ryan Smith's a 6th round pick maximum.
I'm saying, like, unless he wants to go somewhere, I think a guy like Ryan Smith, this might be his last year or second last year.
I think last year.
So I think that, you know, a guy like him, he's not going anywhere. You look at, you know, the defense, Justin Schultz is a guy that, you know, they signed just a couple summers ago. So I don't think he's getting moved. Ferentz was just signed. I don't think there are going to be, I think Richie's right. I think this season is pretty much over, barring something miraculous, because winning 11 games in a row is miraculous. So this season's over. So, you know, you're talking about Jordan Eberle and Taylor Hall and Nugent Hopkins. These guys are elite players. Like Taylor Hall and Eberle, these are guys that could potentially play for Team Canada at the Olympics. Taylor Hall probably is more likely to play than Jordan Eberle. But you're talking about these guys are young, first of all, and they're really talented. And you're not going to start moving those guys because the season's over now. That's more reason not to trade them.
Quickly before we go to break, if you had to take one of the Oilers' young forwards,
Taylor Hall.
Richard?
Who are you going to take out of any of them?
Well, yeah, you answered the
Taylor
question.
Taylor Hall, for sure.
I like Taylor Hall's game. You don't have to worry about his injury history, though.
Yeah.
I mean,
skill wise, though, you go Taylor Hall, and then I think it's a toss up between Eberle and Nugent Hopkins.
Yeah, I might go Eberle.
I might go Eberle, too. Something
I like
Nugent
Hopkins too. I just the size question is a little bit of an issue, but skill wise, I mean, he's the most gifted. Obviously, he's a gifted playmaker. So I mean, you certainly can't go wrong with it with any of them. But at some point, you can't keep trotting out smaller forwards, because we saw. You remember what happened to Montreal last year against Ottawa?
Sure, but the Oilers would gladly take just getting above 500 and making the playoffs.
But they also just don't. You know, you watch them; they don't play a confident game. There's nothing about that team right now, and then there's cohesiveness issues. There are certainly dressing room and cohesiveness issues there.
Lars Eller's comments about them being a junior team aren't so far off in hindsight.
Not only that, and one of the reasons for desperation is when Dallas Eakins is clamping on to that comment to motivate, because that means that the internal motivational tools haven't yet been working and needs to go outside the locker room to try and create some motivation. You look at this team, and like, you can't tell me there aren't some locker room issues, because this team is not, you know, Jay Feaster came on the show and said his team needs to be greater than the sum of its parts. This is the opposite. Because talent-wise, they have a lot of it. You know, certainly they need to play defense. Certainly there's fit. You know, there's certain things that they need to do. You can do that if you want to and if you're buying into the team and all that stuff. This team, and I know goaltending has been bad, but there's nothing here. It was on 4 games.
Right. And when you talk about the Oilers and some of the cap space they're going to have going forward, because as we've mentioned at the top of the segment, you got to start looking forward to next year, because this year is a write-off, right? So you're not going to fix any of your short-term problems. So to me, what this team is screaming out for is a veteran to take some of that scoring pressure off of these guys. And Ryan Smith and Hemsky just don't have that in them. Those guys' best years are behind them. So you need another guy to be in there to play on the top line. You split up those three guys, Eberle, Nugent, Hopkins, and Hall, and you take some pressure off of these guys.
What the hell are you doing on the back end right now? You got Ferentz after this year, and everybody else is unsigned except for Klefbom, who I know they like, but he's a young guy. So, I mean, and what are you going to do in goal after this year? All your goalies are UFAs. Now, you're going to have to sign somebody, but there goes going to go some money. But I'm more concerned about their defense long term. I mean, I know they got some prospects in the system. Don't get me wrong, but young defensemen take a while to develop, so you better get some guys who can play now.
Don't worry, Oilers fans. Craig McTavish is pissed off. You might be. I think you're probably a little more pissed off, though. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Going to go around the NHL, talk about a number of news and notes that have taken place over the past 7 days. We start with Toronto Maple Leaf center Nazem Kadri, suspended 3 games for his hit Wednesday night on Minnesota Wild goaltender Nicklas Backstrom.
How do you know Remus is opping?
Because the music goes to Metallica. And, you know, what's going to be next? After Velvet Revolver probably at some point after that. Little old school Guns N' Roses, Remus, you're nothing if not consistent.
That's amazing.
Yeah. What did you think of that Kadri? What do you think of the suspension? You think that was warranted? What did you think of the hit by Kadri?
Suspension was warranted, 3 games, running back from reckless abandon, and then pretending that he wasn't going to hit him, like he wasn't trying to hit him. Come on, man. I mean, you were trying to hit him. You went right at him, like elbow to head, shoulder to head, up the goalie. Can't do that. And later on, he smoked Granlund, too. I didn't like that hit either. People went both ways on that one. But, playing like an idiot. He got 5 minutes in the game for the Granlund one. That's the thing.
He didn't get anything for the Backstrom one.
So it's the weird part about that is the 5-minute game was for the one he wasn't suspended for, but you can't do that. And both times he acted like, oh, I didn't do anything. Come on. You ran the goalie, and don't pretend that was an accident.
Yeah, it was a dirty play. I don't think anybody's going to disagree with that. And the thing that bothers me about that is the goalie is really not protected in that case.
That's right.
Because Kadri's tipping the puck and Backstrom's kind of, trying to make that save. And you could argue, I mean, we don't have the time right now to do that, but I mean, you could argue a little bit that, maybe you give him 5 games, but 3 games is pretty strong. And the thing to me about this hit is what it does to the Leafs. Dave Boland is most likely done for the year. Tyler Bozak
is not for the year for Boland.
Well, he's done for a while. He's a good portion of the year. It's a serious injury that with the tendon in his foot. And they need Kadri in the lineup. And Kadri's running around, and that's not what Kadri's game is anyways. Sure, yeah, Kadri's, the type of guy that can he'll be physical and aggressive on the forecheck and all that, but he's the type of guy that he had a great year last year, and now he's out suspended for 3 games. I believe he's already missed one of those games, right?
Yeah, last night against Buffalo, tonight against Buffalo.
Yeah, so he's already
again.
Missed the game, Richie. But
you're right, though.
I mean, that's...
Is it a selfish play? Given their
it's just dirty.
I don't know. He's thinking,
dirty.
I'm the only center on the squad right now, and I'm going to do that. Just an idiotic play at the time. I don't think it's, Yeah, it's a stupid play. Yes, you can say it's selfish. I don't know if these things don't go through the guy's head, I assume, when he's running, when he's skating hard or going towards the goalie. But it was a stupid play.
I think, if anything, on this show, what we've talked about, guys, so much, when you look at the two, hot topics of the year, fighting, headshots, And that's you could chalk that up to headshots, because where's the respect there? Like what is Kadri thinking when he's following through? And Richie mentioned that he kind of tried to make it look. I mean, he fully follows through with him, and I have no idea what precipitated this, but I mean, he fully tries to take Backstrom's head off there.
Well, the problem
and
you
you're
have
thinking
also,
like, why? What's the point?
The problem you have also there is. Brendan Shanahan's handing out the suspensions. Brendan Shanahan was a power forward who went to the net. He's going to give you the benefit of the doubt.
Right, but in this case, he knows when it's a power forward, having a legitimate play, and when it's a power forward just attacking
Richie,
a goaltender.
Richie, you mentioned, Shanahan, made a living cross-checking defensemen in front of the net and getting his elbows up, dropping the gloves. I know what you're saying, and I think in this case, again, this goes back to the whole, the NHL, how many games they give out. They've done a pretty good job this year, but again,
enough about the suspensions.
Could be a little bit more.
Along the same lines with the Leafs' center problems, they acquired Peter Holland from the Anaheim Ducks earlier today. No sense in really talking about that. It's just a guy.
Peter Holland was a healthy scratch in Anaheim. He was a guy that he's got some offensive talent. He's still young, and the Leafs right now, need some NHL caliber guys, but I mean, he's not a top six guy on most teams in the NHL.
Blue Jackets, injury problems in Columbus. Marian Gaborik out 3 to 4 weeks with a knee sprain there. Hasn't had the greatest year.
Just right there, I mean, remember what happened with his knee sprains and his groin problems in Minnesota. So that, as soon as I hear that, I mean, you got to start thinking, Gaborik, you know, had a good year last year.
UFA as after the season.
As soon as, exactly, it's tough timing for him, Richie. But, you know, he's had so many injury problems, and he's been pretty good for Columbus this year. Columbus has struggled a little bit out of the gate. But when you start hearing the knee issues coming back for Gabrick, that's scary stuff.
With Ezzy on that one, and Columbus has struggled. They're last in the awful Metropolitan Division.
Metro Division.
Yeah. Still a bad name. Jonathan Quick, LA Kings goaltender, leaves the game versus Buffalo earlier this week. A grade 2 groin strain. He's out approximately 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, tough for a groin strain for a goalie, especially an athletic goalie like Quick. I mean, Scrivens goes out and gets a shutout in his first game, you know, after Quick's injury there in Jersey, after being put out long term. I believe it was his first game. But, you know, Scrivens is a guy that we don't really know a ton about. You know, obviously I saw him in Toronto, and the Leafs have been great this year in net with Bernier and with Reimer. And when Scrivens goes to LA, you know he's going to be a guy who's not playing a ton because Quick's relied on that often. Yep. So this is a big injury. But one thing about LA, you know, Quick's huge for them, but and you see it in the playoffs a lot.
Good defensive team.
But LA's a very good defensive team, and they're big, and they take away a lot of room. So against lesser competition, which isn't in the playoffs, I think Scrivens will be able to hold the fort, relatively speaking, over the next couple weeks.
Scrivens was excellent for the Toronto Marlies in the AHL, but he's more suited to the backup role, Richie, you're right. And he's not going to be mistaken for, you know, a top 10 or top 20 goaltender in the NHL, for that matter, because of the fact that in Toronto they gave him the chance, but he was more reduced to that backup role. They called up Martin Jones from Manchester of the AHL, but that's huge because of Quick's ability to steal games. He had 10 shutouts a couple years back. And, you know, he's obviously won the Conn Smythe, but, you know, they would be more able to weather the storm compared to a team like an Edmonton or a Florida, you know, teams that are, you know, have their own issues defensively. But, you know, hopefully he comes back. And again, Richie, he's another guy. He might be the number one or number two goalie for USA at the Olympics.
Yeah, and that's a good point, Ezzy, in terms of the Olympics. I apologize. Scrivens played the night before in Long Island.
And he played last night in New Jersey.
Yeah, I knew that. Yeah.
Scrivens played against Winnipeg. Did he not?
No.
Quick. No, that was Quick. That was the first game of the year.
Didn't Quick get pulled for Scrivens? Check that. Remus, can you check that? I'm pretty sure Ben Scrivens played against the Jets.
In that game, he did pull him. You're right.
That's what I'm saying.
He didn't start.
Well,
yeah, he played the last.
Well, yeah, what I'm saying is Scrivens did play against the Jets. Hey, so I get a little credit here once in a while.
I thought you meant start. I mean, the guy had, before.
Oh, Richard, you know, Drew's saying, oh, no, Scrivens didn't play here.
You weren't Quick went out. He had 2 starts. I mean, he wasn't playing at all.
No, I'm just saying. I wasn't saying he started. I was just saying he did play in that game. Because I remember we were scrumming around him in the Kings dressing room after.
Oh, wow.
Well, I mean,
name dropper.
Yeah, so that's a little bit of look at me over here. Ezzy trying to elevate himself over you and I there, Richie.
I don't need to elevate myself.
No, you're...
I'm already elevated.
Tell you what, there's a joke there I'm not even going to go.
I know. Where are you going to go with that? You're as high as Rob Ford
right now?
There
something along those lines. Last one, Chicago Blackhawks acquire Christopher Stieg from Florida.
I like that move.
For Jimmy Hayes and like Dylan Olsen.
I guess he'll be partying with Patrick Kane in a limo pretty soon there, right? you know, Christopher Stieg... You know, he's obviously won a cup there in Chicago 4 years ago, and it's a move where, let's be honest, guys, they've had, you know, a mixture of, you know, guys like Brandon Saad and Jimmy Hayes wasn't really working out, but they've had a lot of wingers there playing on that second line, which, you know, has had varying degrees of success because they like to put Tave Sharp and Hossa together. Or Caney, sorry. And so,
right.
I mean, you know for Stieg is a guy where you're bringing back a guy that you know exactly what he's all about. And, you know, and the salary cap, I think, is 50% from Florida. So they're eating up some of that salary.
Yeah.
So I like that move from the Chicago perspective.
You know what? This is a classic case of Chicago looking good. But, you know, Florida wants to get young players. Dylan Olsen and Jimmy Hayes were picks of Dale Talon prior to Dale Talon leaving Chicago.
Sure.
So he's happy to get those guys back, is familiar with those guys. Versteeg is the kind of guy who will go to Chicago at half the salary, and you'll say, great move by Chicago. And he's looking really good, I bet. But he's not playing against the top competition anymore. And what happened is he goes to Toronto, he goes to Florida, there's pressure on him, he does nothing. I mean, he's not that not good enough.
Right.
And so they're going to put him on a third line role on the wing. They're going to have little to no pressure on him behind Tave, Sharp, Hossa, Kane, Bickle, even all those guys. And I'm sure he'll flourish. But people will say, oh, why didn't you do it in Florida? Well, because he ain't playing third line against other teams' third defensemen.
Matchups matter. Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment for this Saturday afternoon here on TSN1290.ca. Yes, Richard Pollock.
Oh, this is a great Bruce song.
Pearl Jam, baby.
Saw that coming from a mile
actually,
away.
Actually, you know what? Good tie-in, Richie. When you saw Springsteen in Chicago, wasn't Vedder there?
Yeah, but this is not Bruce.
Well, no, I mean, there's still a tie-in.
Boy, are you trying to bail Remus out on that one
there, isn't what? Reem hasn't gotten enough sleep today, so...
I'll tell you what, he did show... I'll give Remus credit.
Remus has been great, but, you know, this is his go-to.
Yeah, this was the last... It was almost a perfect show, Reem, if you'd been able to nail the Bruce song right there.
It's a little bit apropos, because Drew's glory days are behind him anyways, so...
You've definitely used that joke before. Definitely have used that
Drew,
joke
Drew, you know,
before.
When you've done... hundreds of radio shows, like, I mean, I run out of material here. I need fresh material.
Well, we were talking about it earlier off air that we completely missed, I believe, our 3-year anniversary on this fine station.
Yeah, I think
has they actually bought us all a cake and ate it on the way to the studio.
That happens.
Yeah, so we've been on TSN 1290 for 3 years now.
Yeah, and you've been eating 3 years worth of cake, so we're all in the same.
Yeah, that's awesome. We should have a party tonight.
I've really like we've been here since about 10:30. I've seen you guys since about 10 o'clock. Yeah. I'm good for a while, I got to tell you.
Remus will have us over.
And you weren't even at the game yesterday.
Yeah, I was at the game. I was just in my seats.
Yeah, you went home early.
You went home early.
Yeah, I went home early. Admittedly, I was quite tired.
Didn't you have the pierogies last night?
I did have the pierogies last night. Yeah,
they enjoyed were tasty. Them on a flatbed, you said.
Well, it's a flat top grill. Like, you get the pierogies where you get the Jets dog, so it was a flat top grill, and you know, they get a nice little sort of crisp around.
Remus, are you ordering 4 pierogies, or are you telling us we have 4 minutes?
That was the 4-minute warning. I think. Okay. Yeah, but you know, he might also want 4 pierogies.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, it's
the medium meal was pierogies. Too yesterday,
right? So it works out well. We're all on the same, you know.
Actually,
wavelength.
I don't know if you guys saw. I thought Drew was just sitting in his seat early in the game and just with his mouth open, and as he was just hop, tossing them out.
Yeah, exactly. Like a trained seal. I just clap for pierogies. is that how it works?
Oh God. Well, your seal—the seal impression that you just
did—Drew, that gets the seal of our approval.
Was worth the price of admission.
You didn't pay anything.
Exactly. So, are we going to? By the way, are we just mailing in the last 3 minutes?
Yeah, are we going to talk here, Drew? Or do something?
We can talk. What, you know, Michael Delzato's a healthy scratch for the Rangers today, Richie. You'll know about this one more than anyone. You follow the Rangers pretty closely. What's gone wrong with Michael Delzato there in New York this season?
You know, the coaching changes certainly had an effect on him, Drew. But when Michael Delzato has to, at some point in his career, make that commitment to play defense and at a more serious level. And getting by on an offensive, on his offensive skills is one thing, but he needs to be able to have more of a commitment. And Alain Vigneault is holding him accountable for that. And you know, I don't have a problem with that. The Rangers are, you know, they've had a tough start. They play so long out of MSG. They've had the Rick Nash injury. They've had a lot of issues. But because the division that they're in is so poor, they've been, you know, Vigneault's still able to coach and kind of discipline his team. And some people, you know, if you're Edmonton or whatever it may be, you're not afforded that luxury. But in New York, you can still coach that way. Look at the Rangers. I mean, they're fourth spot in the Metropolitan Division. Like, a crossover would hurt them, but they're only 2 points behind Carolina and Washington are second and third in that division. Those teams are both brutal.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Drew, that's the most intelligent thing you've said all day.
If I'm going to make that noise, I should get some pierogies at least out of it.
Wow.
Richard Pollock.
I'm going to jeer. I mean, you know, you watch a lot of hockey, but can the commentators stop with these made-up cliches? What the hell is compete level? You mean playing hard? Great period. Really like his compete level. You mean the player was playing hard? Net front presence. You mean the guy's going to the net? You know, I what are you talking about half the time? Zone time. I like the period. They had good zone time. You know what? Last time I heard in hockey, you try and have the puck in the other team's zone because you want to score. Oh, I love our zone time. Of course. maybe you played well and you had the puck in the zone. You lose your mind after 10 minutes of all this. I don't even know what they're talking about anymore.
As a Ginsburg.
Well, we didn't get a chance to touch on this in rapid fire because Remus was too busy playing seal sounds and you were too busy eating pierogies and imitating a seal.
You were kissed by a rose once, weren't you?
So I'm going to cheer NBC. It was announced earlier this week that the Penguins and Blackhawks stadium game series will be aired nationally. The first scheduled primetime regular season game, that will be aired since NBC reacquired the NHL rights. So it's great exposure for the NHL. I'm going to cheer that.
That's a cheer thought of literally 2 seconds ago as you looked at the show plan.
100%.
100% on that.
I had stuff out of mine all week.
Yeah. I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to cheer. It's not hockey related, but it was, you know, after a week of watching Rob Ford really destroy the image of the city of Toronto.
Says who?
Well, yeah. Saying most...
Hold on, Toronto had a good image?
Most reasonable people... so it was good to see the San Francisco Bat Kid yesterday. That was a nice story to wrap up the week yesterday. And if you haven't seen it, the Make-A-Wish Foundation did great work with all that. Okay, that's it for this Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Calgary Flames General Manager Jay Feaster. Big thank you to Hockey Hall of Fame journalist Al Strachan. And big thank you to Minnesota Wild TV analyst Mike Greenlay. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. It will also be available on tsn1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Next Saturday, 8 a.m. start time for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The Jets and Wild are at 2 o'clock, so we're at 8 a.m. Wednesday evening, NHL midweek at 6 o'clock here on this fine station. For producer Tim and producer Michael Remus, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsburg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.